This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. Join us each week as we interview those who help Tyler Longview residents make their lives better. And as always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show or any topic you would like us to consider at ktbb.com/infocus. My guest today again is Maya Golden Bethany. I'm very happy to have her back in studio. She is with the 1-in-3 Foundation. Good morning, Maya.
Good morning. Thank you for having us back on.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it the first time. I think this is a very important topic. I think there's some timely things to tie into it. Why don't we get started by you telling everyone about the 1-in-3 Foundation that you founded?
Thank you for supporting our cause and also trying to help promote the organizations in East Texas that are trying to fill in the gaps. We appreciate the support of the community. The 1-in-3 Foundation, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides healing and counseling resources to survivors of sexual trauma. We work primarily with women, female-identifying persons, but we offer services to those who otherwise would not be able to economically afford counseling. So anyone that reaches out to our agency, if they'd like to get in with a licensed trauma specialist, then we work on with our team and our donors and funders to essentially provide scholarships to allow them to get into counseling sessions and get support, because we did not want finances to be a social barrier to healing, and it should not be. And so that's our primary program. We also offer a weekly PTSD support group, and that meets every Wednesday evening. And it is led by a licensed trauma specialist, but it's also peer-led. So how the group operates or what they focus on that particular evening is determined by the group. And then a specialist is there for anyone who's in care or distress. And we also offer a variety of other programs. Primarily, we do lunch and learns. We try to offer those in the community on timely topics or things that are relevant in the news, conversations sometimes that people are having about sexual abuse, sexual assault, especially when it comes up in the news. So we've done things, on Time's Up, Me Too in the past. We have done some Title IX presentations. Particularly, we've been responsive to hashtag Why I Didn't Report when that was trending at one point in time, as to why sexual assault survivors often don't come forward or why they remain silent. So we try to educate not just the community, but also care providers and law enforcement. In many cases, you might see someone who's having either symptoms of trauma and it's not being registered as that. So a police officer might see someone that's a repeat offender for various crimes or specific addictions, or a counselor might be working with someone who shows chronic illnesses, but they haven't gotten necessarily to the heart of that. And so we try to help people understand that a lot of times it's a childhood trauma that has led to these manifestations of coping mechanisms that can often be unhealthy when they're adults. So we try to educate and provide continuing education credits to the community and care providers in that situation. And then annually, we offer the Evolve Women's Conference, which is a day-long conference where we offer personal and professional tracks for wellness and networking for women. So there's a lot that goes along with being a 21st century woman, as workers, moms, heads of households in a lot of cases, and trying to be entrepreneurs as well. We try to cultivate those relationships and draw connections, but then also focus again on mental health and cultivating wellness and making sure that women are taking care of themselves, because often we don't. We are often the go-to for everyone else's care, and sometimes that can be lost. And so the Evolve Women's Conference is a day-long event to focus just on self-care, but also professional needs. And it's a lot of laughter and a lot of joy in sharing and connection. So those are our four primary programs: the counseling support services for low income or those with little to no income, the PTSD support group, our lunch and learns, and the Evolve Women's Conference.
It's a perfect answer. I want to give out the URL very quickly. It's 1in3foundation.org. 1in3foundation.org. And Maya, the obviously the purpose for this program today is to reintroduce people to 1in3 as we did originally. But I don't always have the chance to talk to founders of foundations when I do this show. And when I interviewed you the last time, I think I was busy. It's, you know, I do other things and I didn't realize and didn't do all my due diligence and didn't realize your story exactly. So briefly, or it doesn't have to be briefly, I just want to make sure we get to 1in3 Foundation. But tell me what a young woman whose aspirations were in broadcasting and sports journalism, how in the world did you end up in Tyler, Texas, founding a 1in3 Foundation for young women, or all women?
It's been a particularly interesting life journey. I did start my career in broadcast journalism, and I still freelance on the side, but I was originally working in Dallas. I worked at WFAA and was very fortunate to work along those journalistic titans, really, and was young, idealistic, kind of that bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young reporter, and I sent out a few resume tapes and came to Tyler and became embedded in this community, and this is now home. And so my family's here. I met my husband here. You know, my son is raised here. And in my journey, in my adulthood of living in East Texas, it's also been a turning point in my life because I had been in therapy for the sexual abuse that I experienced as a child over a number of years. And I essentially had undiagnosed complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Complex PTSD is slightly different from what most people know as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, because complex PTSD is the result of multiple traumatic events. So
the cumulative result of those events, like over years.
Correct. Okay. So someone, and they don't all have to be of the same variety or nature. So someone could have been a survivor of sexual trauma, but then also been involved in a horrific accident or witnessed another crime of a different nature with a relative or been involved in a crime or survived even a natural disaster. All of those things, your body is really trained to respond to, and we go into survival mode. The problem is when you have complex PTSD is we don't often recognize that we don't have to be in survival mode anymore. And so for me, I noticed that it was affecting my relationships. It was affecting my work. I was a perfectionist, a hyper type A of the highest variety. But also I was showing these manic mood swings and dealing with depression and even battling some addictions behind the scenes, no matter what people saw on air. So I was very lucky to have the resources to be able to go to a treatment facility and enter that treatment facility and have nothing to do but to work on myself for a week. And while I was there, the thought came to me that how many other people needed this type of resource? How many other people needed some type of intensive focus on themselves, intensive healing from childhood trauma? And I got to see that when I was there, how unfortunately common this is.
But it's 1in3.
1in3, correct. And we don't talk about that. And so I didn't, when I came home and was continuing my healing journey, I didn't want to see anyone in East Texas have a barrier to their own healing journey because they couldn't afford it. It just didn't make sense to me. And it just felt in my heart that this was a need in the community. But also, I also saw a gap in the fact that a lot of the agencies, and there are so many wonderful resources in our community. There's the East Texas Crisis Center that works with the immediate aftermath of sexual assault. There's For the Silent that focuses on human trafficking. There are so many organizations that are doing the work for survivors, but it can be a lifelong process. And what you feel when you're 20 or 24, when I moved to East Texas, might not be what you feel at 44. And it might change if you become a parent. It might change if you get married. It might change if you take a new job. You might see how your responses are impacted by this. And so I really saw
that. Are you able to be aware if without some sort of treatment or counseling, Are you able to be aware as an adult that the decisions you make and the actions you have could be affected by triggers you had as a child? Or do most people just want to sally forth and move on and not dig in, if you will, dig down?
I think my experience in working with the clients or the people that reach out to us is that they all start to sense that something is, I don't want to say wrong, but they start to sense that something in their life is not as it should be, that something is in disarray or it's impacting, again, their relationships or their mood, and they want better for themselves. And I think a lot of us, unfortunately, have to reach almost a rock bottom before we aspire to do better or have better or even feel better. Again, if you've been in survival mode most of your life, you don't know any other way to be. So when I receive a call or the 1 in 3 Foundation receives a call, it's often someone saying, you know, I've noticed how often I slip into depression, or I've noticed how this impacted my, you know, being a mother, or I noticed how this is infecting my marriage, or, you know, there are days where I'm burnt out and I don't want to go to work. And when people start to be that aware about themselves, I think that is the turning point. And our lead counselor, Brenda McBride, she's a licensed clinical social worker, and she's an amazing warrior out there doing the work with survivors. But she always says, notice that. And so that's my encouragement to people in the community as well. If you're struggling in any way, notice that. Don't ignore it, because I think we are so programmed in our society to have a bad day or feel down or feel off, and then we just sort of push it down and soldier on, because
it's soldier on mentality. And I don't know if it's America that brings that forward, but it's not good for us as a society. It's actually what we have are a bunch of harmed people walking around, and I still do not understand the impediment people see with medication, why they are so adverse to taking medication, the fact that it's a chemistry issue. Your soul's not bad. You know, you're not taking medication for your soul. You're taking medication to regulate electric activity in your brain. And there's such a stigma with this with people. And I think that, or just even appearing like a victim by just sharing your story or doing something to get it off your chest. We've just been so inundated with stories of where that goes wrong for people. And so I think it has not just women, but men shut down. And when you're shut down, you can't grow, mm-hmm. in my opinion. The last time I had you in, you know, I've it's been a little over a year now that I've done this now. You were one of my first that came in. Your interview affected me about as much as anything, because it's not like skipping through the daisy fields on some of these interviews. You know, these are real problems. These are not only real problems, but real people with them. And I applaud you so much for trying to help these women get through this. And I guess my question for you, it's 1 in 3. That's obvious. Are there signs we can see? Is it ever appropriate to ask someone if they're hurting?
I'm really glad that you said that and then also asked that. Our name is derived from the statistics from the World Health Organization that 1 in 3 women in their lifetime will experience physical or domestic violence. That's 1 in 3 women that have reported it. That's not unknown cases. And silence is a big part of being a survivor. And that usually comes from shame, and it usually comes from guilt. And
misplaced, both.
Yes. It's never the fault of the person who has been attacked or abused. That always rests solely with the perpetrator. But as you mentioned, there's such stigmas with mental health. I've heard, it almost sounds cliche to say it, but you hear so often, well, I didn't have it as bad as some people, or.
Right. And I think I could push back. You know, God, I'm not defending perps at all, but I think I make this joke all the time, but Northeast Texas, Southwest Arkansas, and Northwest Louisiana are a hotbed for this type of behavior and have been for generations. And so I think generationally, you begin to think that's okay. I know a lot of people in this area that have had childhood trauma. I mean, it's common. It's more common than not, maybe more than one in three, I think, in this specific geographic area. And I don't know if it's socioeconomic. I don't know if it's there are a lot of small towns and lack of whatever. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's wrong. But I wonder if it in some people's lives this hadn't been such a pattern, they know no different. And you've got, I think, the onus for us who can get therapy, deal with things, to sally forth, if you will, but not forget those victims that couldn't figure out how to do those things. That's where I think your value is.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I do agree that it is appropriate to ask someone if they're okay. Or what do they need? And that's a lunch and learn that we've done in the past, is what to do when someone you love has been sexually abused, because that's the next step. If you ask them, what do they need? If they're okay, sometimes someone is just waiting for that person to ask them. And that can open up their sharing, or sometimes it can have the adverse effect of them shutting down. And that's a very real response when that's what they are accustomed to. But it's never not okay to ask someone if they're okay. And it's okay, you know, we've heard it before, but it's okay to not be okay and to say that.
Yeah, you know, I know it's rare now in this day we live in, but empathy is not a horrible emotion or a horrible thing to have. And I think we're in a world now where there's a great lack of it. Again, I want to give the URL out. If there's anybody out there needing help right now or know someone that does, it's 1in3foundation.org. How challenging is it when our pop culture references and our leaders, not going to mention any names, not going to get into trouble, but when we have celebrities, if you will, on trial for doing the very thing that we're talking about, and nothing seems to be happening. Does that make people even want to get silent or be silent more, because they just feel if they come out with their story, that if they're just going to get disbelieved or you know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm at a loss for words. This is never an easy interview for me. I love doing it, but this one's never an easy interview for me. But I'm trying to think if I was, I'm not going to use a younger woman, not a little girl or whatever, but a younger woman, how difficult it would be to come forward seeing all the things I see in the public eye of how they're not listened to.
You're exactly right. That does contribute to the culture of silence and the stigmas around sexual trauma coming forward. And these high-profile cases that we often see, and the responses to them on social media, the responses in the comments on news sections, I pay very close attention to those. And I am still always appalled that we are here after Me Too, after Time's Up.
I don't see how Diddy's free right now. I don't see, after that video surfaces of he terrorized that young lady. And there's nothing she could have done, period. But then you can see with your own eyes that there's nothing she's doing. She's simply being a victim. That's all she's doing. And somehow we're okay with him coming on TV. Looked high to me, you know, whatever. But coming with this ridiculous statement that, you know, I regret it. Of course you regret it. It's a horrible thing you did. You actually took someone's dignity away, and you're going to say you regret it and then go back to your life. And I got a soft spot for this stuff, but it really, it bugs me. Like, I don't understand why we don't begin to make examples out of the perpetrators and not just have to offer aid to what they've done.
I cannot agree with you more. If I could give this hearts and stars and multiple likes, I would, because what you just said about we often see these people being victimized. And that's a word that I'm even careful to use because we'd like to say survivor, but we shouldn't have to survive these incidents. And people should not be robbed of their dignity. We should not have to live with the repercussions of it for, you know, I can say from my personal experience, I was 5 the first time it happened. I'm almost 44 years old. It still affects me some days. And that's going to be a lifelong battle. And I've come to accept that. But when you also see in the media how society reacts, how people, well, what, she must have done something to provoke him, or what was she wearing, or did she drink? Why was she at the party? We see all these comments.
Antonio Brown, didn't matter how many girls he beat up until he started taking his clothes off on the sideline and flipping everybody off. Then we had enough of him. You know, that really struck me. I was like, wow, this, everything he's done, and this is what pushes us over the line. A temper tantrum on the sideline. He's got way more things in his life that need counseling and addressing of all the people he leaves in his wake harmed.
And
yeah, I said it.
I've seen it time and time again. You mentioned the Diddy case, and when the survivor in this case, Cassie, came forward initially.
Oh, 1 second, if you would. I realize we don't have the youngest of audiences, so we're talking about Sean Combs. He goes by Diddy. I'm not trying to insult anybody, but that's who we're talking about. He's a rap star, producer, mogul, billionaire. I think maybe close, with a lot of power that abuses people.
And when we see these cases, we've seen it with even actors and, you know, divorce cases where it's coming out that there was, you know, mental or verbal abuse. And we still tend to see the society side with the perpetrator. Or if a video is released or a phone call or a voicemail is released, then the victim in that case is just doing an attack on that perpetrator. It's not saying, well, it was wrong for that person to do that. It's, well, why would they release that? We question those things. And I'm not saying I question it, but I'm seeing that in the news. And I see that, I'm not talking about the news media themselves, but I see it in the comment sections. Again, I see it on social media.
Horrible. Like, and that's, I don't even know how. And forget it, young women, young people survive now. I mean, it's, I used to be a pretty cold-blooded troll, if you will, when I was younger. And before even there was digital media, I was a troll. You know, I tell you, you know, the baby was ugly. But gosh, I know that every single day in this country, hundreds of young women must come out to try and tell their story and get so judged and ridiculed when they just begin to come out with it that they'll never speak of it again. They'll carry that trauma to the grave.
You're exactly right. And that applies for men and for women as well. And with men, there's even more of a stigma in that regard. But then we also have...
I think that's part of Diddy's issue, to be honest. If I could be wrong, but I think we're going to... I mean, if we dig... I'm not making excuses for Diddy. But I don't know. I don't think you can be right and be capable of that kind of treatment of another human being. I think you have to be a broken individual to do that.
No, I absolutely agree that, you know, someone that's on a path to wholeness and wellness cannot inflict that kind of harm on another person. And so I feel that there is a need for more education programs, more empathy, more topics about, and it's starting to be ridiculed, which is really unfortunate. But when we have conversations about what healthy masculinity looks like, you know, those programs are sometimes being pushed to the wayside. Even some school districts in the area don't want to offer those.
I don't know where, obviously I'm a man, so I can finally speak to this. I don't know where I'm at on this. The Kansas City Chief punter that gave the talk, he gave a talk at a Catholic school. Now, I don't buy everything he said. It's not that I don't buy it. I don't live my life like that. But we live in a country where he's free to live like that. And if his religion, if he wants to speak to people that are like-minded, or actually if he wants to speak to anybody, he can, I don't care. But I get that at that event, that's what it was. But I also remember getting really pissed off, and I got aggravated when the Methodist Church split recently, and it wasn't just about gays; it was also about women's place. And I don't know how in the world we're going backwards on this crap, but I agree that there's no higher joy or honor in the world than to be a mother. Same with a father, by the way. And I'm not going to necessarily say homemaker, because I'm sorry, I don't think there's any awesomeness to being able to make a bed. I think it's great if you can stay home and do it. But what really changes life is for us to be a good parent for our children and affect them positively, not whether we have dinner on the table at 5 o'clock. Masculinity is being able to be there for people. Masculinity is being able to help people when they need a moment. Masculinity is being able to understand, be empathetic, and be vulnerable. That's masculinity. And if you can't figure that out, you're an idiot.
So. No, I think that we need more programs that push empathy, push bystander intervention.
The Mentoring Alliance. It's larger, it's faith-based, but it's, I've interviewed them, and they offer great examples for young people.
We've worked in the past with groups like the, there's a group out of D.C., they're called Men Can Stop Rape, is their actual program name. And they came down a few years ago and worked with One in Three Foundation, and we brought in the team captains from all of the area high schools in Smith County. And we used the sports teams because often the times on campus, that's who the leaders are looked at as being the leaders in sports. The prolific athletes on campus or hold the campus attention, but the community attention as well. Football is king in East Texas. So we brought them in. We talked with them about, you know, checking your boy. If they say something that sounds inappropriate about women that you wouldn't want somebody saying about your mother or your sister, how to correct that, how to be a leader and example of that, from the way you walk in the halls to how you, again, interact in the things that you say when the coach isn't around, even those types of conversations. And it was very interesting to see that the young men's response to it. But I think that the more we teach empathy and the more we teach understanding, but I think also if we start to show people as well the repercussions of these actions, that you can change someone's life drastically for the rest of their life from what you do in a 5-minute period. And if we are able to show the victim's side, then I hope that, again, society is more accepting, more empathetic, believe survivors. That's not just a hashtag or a tagline, but really starts to encourage people, both men and women, to be able to come forward and break the silence, but also educate people of this is a real problem globally, and it's up to us to change those patterns.
Absolutely. And to think that we're powerless to do it is absolutely ridiculous. Raise your children to care about other people, to help, to want to do good. And I know, gosh, raising a child, there's no book to it. It's very challenging. Very challenging now today than it was, you know, 30 years ago. They just put us on our bike and sent us on our way. And now they have much more. And I think as much as we talk about the Gen X and the, I'm sorry, not Gen X, Gen Z and Alpha being so soft, probably really hard and all the wrong, can come out wrong, but their souls are getting hard from all the angst and hate and abuse and everything they see commonplace. And, you know, you didn't hear about this stuff very much when I was young. Maya, we're coming down to the end of it. I want to give out the URL one more time. It's 1in3foundation.org. I want to thank you for your time today and for your efforts more than anything. And anything you'd like to add to wrap it up?
Just want to thank you for having us on again. We will be offering a community program. We've partnered with some Austin filmmakers for The Princess, a short film screening, and we will be doing that this fall. So if you follow us on social media or on our website, you can look for the information about where and when that will be this fall.
Maya Golden-Bethany, thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.